wanted for so many years. And day in and day out, all we keep hearing about problems, more and more problems with providing respect to the veterans and take care of their needs and everything else. As we were preparing for this show for this week, we're looking at Army Times, and all of a sudden we see another story. We had an Army Lieutenant Colonel that murdered his daughter and then committed suicide down at Fort Knox. That's in the Army Times story that just came out on today on Wednesday as we pre-record this. Then we turn around and we got another story about another individual, a Thomas Murphy, that committed suicide in the Phoenix parking lot where all the nightmares started with the VA. Well, I mean the revelations of the nightmare, not just the nightmare being out at the Phoenix VA, but it just never seems to end. And all of us have lost Paul Lyons here. We all understand what happened to Paul and the failure there all the way around, so we got to continue on. As we prepared, and Ray and I were talking, and Ray, are you there?
Yes,
Ray,
sir.
Ray, John, are you there?
Are you there?
Yes, I am here too, buddy.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
And Ray can translate and explain this too. As we started preparing, Ray said he was out there at Camp Lejeune working with the Marines. And Ray, if I understood you correctly, you said they felt like there was a wall around them or something, didn't you?
Yeah, they had pictures up on the wall that apparently these guys or someone had drawn what was in their mind. And it was brick walls, concrete walls, block walls, all these different walls. And I don't think they can see around them or see over them. And it's just something that's blocking their way, and they don't know where to go, Doug. They're really lost.
I mean, that's the sense that I get because, I mean, when we read everything with Paul, Paul was lost. He did everything he possibly could to help himself, to help everybody else, and the VA and the 101st Airborne totally failed him. And now you're working with active duty Marines that get this feeling like they're lost and they got no place to turn around. I mean, and
sure.
Then we got a murder-suicide, and we got another suicide, and we've had suicide upon suicide, and child and spouse abuse all over the place. I mean, God almighty, what is going on?
Yeah, I think it's culminating, Doug. I think there's so many negative parts of this thing. And at the Wounded Warrior Battalion, Johnny and I go to, we were a couple months ago, we were at one, and everybody was just absolutely depressed. And we asked them, you know, what is wrong? And one of the wounded warriors who they have really nursed back, they got his family together. They built a home for him on base. I mean, everything was great, just going great. And he came in one day, and he said, I'll see you guys later. And he went home and offed himself, you know. And it was like it just knocked the wind out of everybody. You're trying everything you can to, like, you're pouring water or pouring coffee into somebody who's been overdosed, and you're trying to slap them around. You're trying to shake them. You're trying to talk to them. But they are so overdosed on pain and agony and memories and things like that that, you know, they just get overcome by it. So there has to be a way. You said something, Doug, about they've closed a lot of doors to a lot of veterans and talking about mental health. But we have found some open windows that we're going to manipulate. We're going to use those things in behalf of the veterans. So I appreciate that.
We've got to do something. I mean, when we look at this stuff, we got the revelations of Cy Hirsch, the incredible author, researcher, Seymour Hirsch, and I've known Cy for many, many years. I worked on a book with him called Against All Enemies, which was one of the first investigative reports on Gulf War illness and all of the stuff associated with the chemical, toxicological, biological exposures and health effects. And now he came out with the major story and investigative report the other day on the entire Bin Laden stuff, portraying it as if we were just one more scam upon scam on top of each other.
Exactly.
So we're sent to all these wars. We know today that it was all based on lies. Now we know today the military has totally acknowledged, and we've talked about it on this radio show, that they've developed a hotline for all of us that were absolutely exposed to nerve and biological agents, admitting that we were exposed, admitting that they ordered the medical records destroyed, the personnel records destroyed, and you can call in. And I had my cousin here a couple of days ago, and he was with the 82nd Airborne and the artillery, you know, charging all the way forward, and he was in the unit, was cited in the story for the chemical exposures. And so when we called into the hotline at the Pentagon, I mean, you know, they were really nice and everything, but it's kind of like, why did you guys lie and lie and lie and deny and deny and deny, and then all of a sudden acknowledge it, but there's nothing out in the media or the press to get to all of the soldiers other than a handful of people communicating between each other to tell people that they can call in now, they can start setting up their medical care. I mean, no wonder these kids are flustered and giving up. They don't know where to turn or what to do because the people they trusted have abandoned them.
Well, Johnny and I were in a meeting the other day, and I hope I'm not going to hurt anybody's feelings when I say this, Doug, but there were a lot of therapists in there giving all their different examples of what they're doing to help these veterans. And there were some of them that said, okay, we've got them coloring in these coloring books. And we're having a special day coming up called BYOC, Bring Your Own Crayons. These are combat veterans. These are people who've been hurt. These are people who are devastated. And it seems so, I don't know, it frustrated me. And I can imagine what they feel like sometimes.
They're treating them like kindergarten kids. They want them to bring their own crayons and like you're going to have a coloring day like you're a five-year-old.
That's exactly what they're doing. And they're thinking it's good therapy. You know, everybody's trying to come up with therapy. But what we ended up doing, I mean, I got so frustrated. I said a few things, and I didn't mean to hurt anybody's feelings, but it was like, man, these guys are killing themselves. We got to do something that's serious about this stuff. So that's what Johnny and I are working on down here, is trying to get some hope to these guys and trying to reverse the cycle. And you do it one guy at a time or one girl at a time. And it seems to be working, Doug, and what you're doing is working too. So that's a start. You know, that's the way we get this thing finished. So
I walked into the Danville VA Medical Center here in Danville, Illinois, on Tuesday morning for my physical therapy appointment, and right away they had a meeting in there, and I met with one of the chaplains and got a copy of it. And this was the handout of what they said. Number one, my VA has five primary focus areas. Improving the veterans' experience by examining our veteran-facing processes, organization veterans' perspective enable every veteran to have a seamless, integrated, and responsive VA customer service experience, achieving support services of excellence, establishing a culture of continuous performance improvement, enhancing the strategic partnership, and improving the employee experience. But it's like, what did it take before we finally get it? I mean, I've been working with them, providing them information. You've been sharing them. You've been sending them information. And we're trying to get these guys to see the light. But today we woke up and Paul's gone, and now you got guys that see walls around them. And right. Now we got another murder-suicide, and we got another suicide.
Well, Johnny can tell you, he was in a DOD meeting, and he'll talk about this in a minute, but they say that we were losing like 100 a day in the military around the world. And so with those kind of numbers, Doug, that is startling. That is, I mean, 22 a day veterans, but the current military population is, they're just deliberately committing suicide. They're just getting out of the program. I truly believe it came from dysfunctional families growing up or something, because the Vietnam veterans have been, their divorce rate is over 90%. The Gulf War veterans is around 90%. And the kids coming in today in the military are coming from families like that who have been thrown back and forth through marriage and divorce and marriage and divorce. And people have been married and divorced. I have no qualms with that. I was divorced and I found my wife, and she's been the love of my life ever since for 30 years. But still, a lot of people that are trying to, cope with life and self-medicate themselves through alcohol and drugs, they're creating a lot of dysfunction for people. And these kids are growing up. They come into the military with post-traumatic stress, and they have all the classic signs of it. So we're dealing not only with guys coming back, we've got to deal with them before they ever go.
I mean, when they started lowering the enlistment standards, and you had the job market and the education market, the individuals that successfully got a really high quality and participated in their academic education, so they got a good high school education, they took appropriate subject matter, they're out there and they went on to college and the university, and they're still struggling to get a job, even with all the academic qualifications they've got.
That's true.
And then what's left over are these individuals, and I mean, it's frightening for me when you go to and work with these guys and they can't even give you proper change. When you buy an item, or they can't spell the words, or you see it falling down, or you start having trying to have a conversation with them to explain some technical subject in the military, like I did with the nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, the emergency medicine, and it's like it's over their head.
That's why they all carry these phones with them.
Yeah, pardon? Well, you know, if I can add something, Doug, you know, what we're seeing in the challenge of the day is we're just not seeing that in this younger generation. Like you were just saying, we had a colonel that, did a murder-suicide. So here we got a guy that's got more degrees than her thermometer. You got to have a college education and become an officer. So this is actually hitting all of the military. It's hitting it with a vengeance, like a cancer. And what we found out just by talking to them young Marines that day, we'll go back to last Friday when we sit across the table, there were six of them. Out of them six, two had been deployed. So we're looking at about 25% of the room that have been deployed. The other haven't. And what we're just finding is today's military is a lot more stressful than it used to be. I think we've been at war for 15 years. We have a lot of leaders that are in the military now that are suffering with post-traumatic stress. They're not getting any help. Things are coming to a culmination now. Well, what we find happening is rampant alcohol abuse within our military and veteran population, rampant street drug and prescription drug use and abuse, and then we have a lot of domestic violence issues. We got the colonel just killed his, you know, killed somebody, killed his wife, and then we're the ones that were or kids whoever he killed, but. That's just what we're hearing about. We're not hearing about the everyday things that are happening at the grassroots level, and that's where we come in. We don't have the luxury, and I, by working with Ray, we're always we're like the horse in the race that we're trying to catch up because people are dying every day. So we don't have the luxury to sit around and wait on the VA or any other organization out there to get ready. So what we've been doing here on the local level is finding them resources within the departments that already exist and building from the bottom up the relationships to help these young men and women. And that's what we're going to have to do with the community. It's not just relying on the VA. Let's face it, the VA is only going to be able to help so much. They're a government agency. We don't have the time or luxury to sit around and wait for that bureaucracy to change. Hell will freeze over first. So what we've got to do is find within that facility, within the community, and working with partners to be able to challenge, to overcome this challenge. And Ray and I, we've been doing it in Eastern North Carolina. We met. It was a match made in heaven. You know, we were both doing missions, going separate ways. We gelled it. We're working with the local. If we could do what we're doing in Eastern North Carolina and all the bases in this nation, working with the Life After Trauma, and I know, Doug, you received a brochure that we worked on called Life After Trauma. This is written by combat veterans, proof positive that it works because we're still here. And we're getting some very good results. We used that last week at Camp Lejeune with some of those folks, and it's a common sense approach. Letting them know that you're on the other side of this wall now and draw a line in the sand and just move forward. And we got to let these folks know that we can do it, so can you, and it's not going to be made by getting a back massage. It's not going to happen by yoga. It's not going to happen because you went on a 100-mile bike ride or drawed some pictures with the crayon. That may help, but it's not going to fix the problem. It's putting a Band-Aid on it. So we want to lead from the front. And it's not that hard to do. It just takes a little bit of elbow grease, like Ray will tell you. You know, we're out in the trenches every day, Ray, and my hat's off to you. And we stand ready. And, Doug, just like you said, this is not – it's affecting everybody. So we got to have a plan for the colonel. We got to have a plan for the private. We got to have that collective plan for everybody. And moving forward, I think we do.
I think when we saw this one here with this colonel at Fort Knox, that he was the human resource command as a commanding officer down there, one of the senior officers, and he killed his 11-year-old daughter and committed suicide. And my question that's coming up, and the first thing I'm raised, wait a minute, this is where the records are. These are the guy controlling the records, maintaining the records. And we've got total confirmation of alteration and destruction of medical records and personnel files. Did this guy finally reach the limit where he could no longer deal with the fact that the destruction and the altering of records had put him over the edge where he had no longer any hope or dream or anything. I mean, that's the first sense that I got when I saw Human Resources Command, commanding officer. I'm going, Jesus.
There's always a thing behind the thing. But, you know, Johnny was just talking about even the brochure and the stuff that you put out, Doug, that we're trying to get to every veteran we can. And you can find that brochure on my website, www.theneverendingwar.com. It's under L.M. Clark. And if you go to the homepage and you scroll it down, you'll see the brochure. You can print them off, give them to other people and things. But what we're trying to do is help them to understand it doesn't matter what your trauma and what the things were in the past. You cannot let your past hinder your future. Dr. Phil said one time, the only difference between you and the person you admire is the choices you made. And so you have to learn how to make better choices. You have to get a goal, and you have to focus. And that's what we talked to these guys about. And then you can almost see the wall moving from in front of them to behind them. And, Doug, that changes people. They change their whole focus on life of not focusing on their past. They say if you dwell on your past, it will rob your future. And it really does. And we just have to get this message out to people. That's the amazing part of it. So,
I mean, when you sit here, and I'm looking at the brochure, what is again, you got what PTS, okay, so post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
Later or after a traumatic, sometimes many years after a trauma occurred, traumatic, extremely distressing, frightening, or life-threatening, and stress of physical or mental pressure. And I can't overemphasize that it's a combination of physical and psychological pressures. I mean, everybody is trying to treat it as a psychological, and it's a whole mixture of everything else.
That's
so, I mean, that's a definition. So, I mean, there's no D on the end of here. It's just post-traumatic stress, guys.
That's correct.
And then
it's not a disorder, Doug.
It's
not a disorder. It's a trauma. It's an injury. It both causes mental problems, physiological problems, and you can't have one without the other. For those with pure post-traumatic stress, it affects you. Both physically, when you're going through that, we'll call it an episode, you know, you're really hypervigilant, hyperactive. Your blood pressure goes up. You're very, you can't breathe. There's certain things that happen when you have the anxiety. Your brain thinks you're right back in that trauma, and you start physically feeling exactly like you did when you went through that traumatic experience or multiple traumatic experience. And post-traumatic stress comes in many shapes, forms, and fashions. It can attack anybody at any time in any traumatic situation. But what we're finding with the military and the military men and women that have been deployed, number one, is a series of a lot of traumas all wrapped up into one. So you really can't, you know, that's why it's more than an injury. It's more than just a name. It's a real deal. It affects a lot of people. It affects Ray and myself collectively. We found a way how to cope with that and move forward and lead productive lives, and it does not control us. We control our post-traumatic stress, and we just want to make sure that we promote this now at a nationwide level to let people know that they ain't got to live with this. We can help them through the woods, just like Ray was out in the woods and got lost, and he found his way out. We've been in the dark forest of post-traumatic stress. We believe that we can lead anybody who wants to follow us out of that dark forest if they're willing to take the action steps necessary, and it takes a little bit of work. So you ain't going to get something for nothing here, but you can learn how to live with it, you can learn how to control it, and you can learn how to attack it. And we do that, Doug, not with medicine. A little pill ain't going to do it. It's killing people. We do it spiritually. We do it therapeutically. And we do it holistically, and that's the best way to do it and to get out there and talk about it. And you know, basically, that's all I got to say in a nutshell. It's not going to take rocket science. If we could take somebody that was, you know, diagnosed with severe post-traumatic stress like Ray, like myself, and turn that around, then we could do that with anybody. It's very duplicatable.
Yeah, you know, right here you got coping. You may not be able to get over your PTS, but you can learn to cope with the symptoms. You don't have to let it rule your life. You can learn to neutralize the effects of the adrenaline before they destroy you and your family. And that's got to get involved. I mean, for myself, and we've talked about this, and all of us have done it, We came back, and we had horrific activities. Each one of us had a different experience in the military. Every single person, even the individuals who were at the same location at the same time, and Ray, I mean, you can probably attest to this better than anybody else alive, that everybody's experience and how they perceive what happened to them is completely different, isn't it?
Exactly, it is. And I put that in my book, actually, The Never Ending War, because I did want to let them know I'm just one person in the company, and everybody had a different view of what some things are happening. I didn't see their view, or they didn't see mine. Now, the good thing is we did get back together with several of these guys, and we were able to see the whole circumference sometimes of a situation, and so I did put those in there. But, you can't say, well, or nobody can say, well, your trauma is smaller than mine, and it's less effective and less. Man, trauma is trauma. Trauma is actually a life-threatening situation where your brain produces adrenaline to get you out of that situation. Now, super fight or flight, everything is in super mode. And then, but later in life, you get through that situation. Later in life, 20, 30, 40 years later, you will hear something, smell something, see something, a door closes, somebody slaps their hand, somebody does something, and suddenly your adrenaline starts pumping because your brain remembered that trauma, and it thinks you're there again, so it doesn't know the difference between fantasy and reality. So it begins to pump that adrenaline. The adrenaline is what causes you to go in that fight or flight, hyper-feeling, breathing, everything, mental, physical, every other way. And it is destroying people. So you have to find those ways to neutralize that panic attack, or it will totally overcome you. Now, a lot of people, a lot of doctors in the VA and such, they're using what they know. And what they know is a lot of medications. They give you lorazepam, for instance, to keep you from getting too anxious. And then they'll give you sertraline or something like that to keep you from getting depressed. And you're going up and down and up and down. You're never fixing the problem, because if you get off the pills, you got the same problems. So
I mean,
what
Dr. Bart Billings has been made it, Colonel Dr. Bart,
yeah,
made it loud and clear on this radio show with us.
Sure did.
He's made it loud and clear in the communications he's had with you, hasn't he?
Yes, sir. He has, and he also I gave him one of my books, but he read the book and he promoted the book for me, and he also made some of those brochures, and he took them to the conference he went to last week, and he said he's going to give them to his colleagues. That says a great deal. I don't think Dr. Billings would waste his time on something, just not effective or something cute or something. It's just taking people's time.
The coping skills. Been in the trenches, so he knows what's happening. He's a warrior himself.
Exactly. When I put the coping skills in the book, I wanted to make sure they understood. I didn't put stuff in there just to fill up the lines and just make more pages. I put them in there because they work, and they work for me. And if it didn't work for me, I didn't put it in there, because I don't want to mislead anybody, Doug. This is about life and death. This is not only for the veteran himself, but the entire family and the next generation that's coming up. So it's a very serious matter, and I think all three of us take it very seriously.
You know, you talk about anxiety here, and that goes up and down like a yo-yo. I mean, last Friday I got a phone call earlier in the morning for another vet in trouble, and the guy, just literally crossed some field from me. I mean, we could see, stand at his house, I could see the tree at my house, okay? And he didn't know that I existed, and I didn't know that he existed. He definitely needed help. And he was having all the medical problems. We got over there and started looking at stuff, and next thing I know, he was in the Navy, and he was handling the Navy phalanx, and he was handling the 20-millimeter DU rounds, and all they ever told him was all he had to worry about is wear a pair of gloves. And then his medical problems exactly matched, which is in the VA's own literature and all the internal reports. And so here's this guy with all kinds of anxiety, not knowing why he has the anxiety, but his brain senses there's something wrong. They lied to me at some point, and now I have the physiological and psychological consequences that I have to deal with. At the same time that when I ask for help, they turn their back and walk away. And for me, that was just like slam dunk, man. Here we go again.
Yeah.
That's a prime example, Doug, of once again, or last week I was sitting at home, checked the mail. I got a letter in the mail. Attention Gulf War veterans. It's from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and now they're talking about the depleted uranium, the possible nerve agent, biological agent, chemicals there. And I will tell you, I was in the 82nd Airborne Division when we were in Iraq. Our made alarms were going off like crazy. We were in MOP Level 4. And, them M8 alarms don't go off just for no reason. They go off when they detect something. And, for 25 years, we had our government telling us, there was none of this is being used, none of that's being used. And after our good friend Mike McNeely's nephew dies, who got sick right after the Persian Gulf War, who'd been sick and finally passed away at a VA hospital at the age of 48, 49 years old, we're finally getting the government to come out and say, there may be a problem directly related to, maybe something that you might have touched while you were in the military. And that's just, I want to thank you for coming out and first and foremost and talking about that. But what's really killing our number one enemy right now with our military, both active duty, reserve, veteran, retired and non-retired alike, is the medications that they're putting us on, the pills, the side effects totally outweigh the benefits of these products, and the side effects are causing more and more people to become psychotic and then to take their own lives. I mean, we're having people that are really some outlandish things that are going on with them, and that it can only be attributed to, what kind of psychotropic drugs are they putting these people on? I mean, really? We just got to focus on the issues that on
here. I know I just had, right before we called in, TRICARE called me because I'd had a prescription filled, and the prescription that they billed TRICARE was $36. When I bought it across the counter when I ran out, in the same exact drug, exact same thing, it was $10. And then when I talked to the TRICARE rep just not even 30 minutes ago, she said, well, yeah, they charged us $36, but the agreed on price that we gave them was $1.62.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's where it's all at. It's this incredible amount of money and greed and everything on getting these drugs and getting people on them to gather the money. But yet the drugs don't do anything. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, and all of us struggle with it totally. The drug doesn't cure the damage to the soul. The drug doesn't cure the fact that your medical records were destroyed or your orders were issued to lie, cheat, and steal, or that you're ordered to kill somebody who posed no harm to you and all they wanted to do was live their life left alone. I mean, medications doesn't solve that problem.
No. It does only mask it.
Duperate it.
They put me on hydrocodone for pain, and they had me on 8 a day, 325 milligrams apiece, I think it was. Well, I'm getting ready to... I cut them back on myself. I take one a day, and I break it in half, and I take one in the morning, and I take one in the evening. And that's enough. I mean, that helps me with my pain. I do have degenerative bone disease in my ankles and knees, and so I do hurt. But 8 a day, Doug, and then they have you on Zoloft, and they had me on like 2 or 3 a day, and now I take a half of one a day. All I wanted is in my body so I won't have withdrawals and I won't bottom out. I did that one time. I quit it all of a sudden. Boy, I'm telling you, the floor fell out on me. I was suicidal and everything. I went back on Zoloft. This was the first year I was with the VA back in 2003, I think. But when I went back on it, and I said, I'll never get off to get this again because apparently it made me feel better. But, they said, well, take 2, take 3 if you need it, whatever. And I was just zonked out. My wife would complain, your eyes are droopy or you look like you're stoned or something. And people, they don't tell you, Doug. They don't tell you. Usually your wife will, but most people don't tell you, Doug, man, you got a problem, man. My wife, we were in a restaurant, and my wife said several people looked at her like, bless your heart. That's the old Southern thing. Because they knew that she was dealing with a guy that was stoned. I didn't know that, Doug. I mean, that would have been really embarrassing for me. But that's what happens. A lot of these guys are just la-la, and that's where they want to keep them. They don't know what to do about it, so they keep them there.
You know, the other day, the brand-new, and everybody can go online, the brand-new Gulf War Illness update that came in the mail, and we all got it, and also was being sent out. It's online. But they came for pain management. We've been advocating a long time on the myofascial release, the muscle massage, the TENS unit use, the ultrasound, all of this stuff, looking at acupuncture, I mean, and exercise. I mean, for me, one of the most things with the neuromuscular damage and spinal cord damage, which I have found extraordinarily beneficial, is getting back into archery. Because it provides all of the upper arm and upper thing muscle group, you know, activity to do it. But obviously, you've got to ease off on it and take care of it. But between that and the other thing, too, and for me, it's been a godsend, and I know other ones that are in the military that I've worked with, we've been back into theater and community theater. And so now we have to keep our mind totally active as we memorize lines or something else. So what we're doing is optimizing remaining function and actually excelling and exceeding what a normal function might be. But that pulls you all back around. So, yeah, hey, you might have medical problems, you might have psychological problems, but all these coping mechanisms let you go on with your life and excel.
Exactly. Well, you do. It takes a lot of effort, but you find out ways to calm yourself down that are good and normal. You find ways to exercise and do things that you should. I still do martial arts after 24 years, you know, and the art itself taught me how to continue, never give up, never give up. And I've been able to apply that in my life. One of the, you know, when I tell them to focus on a goal, Doug, in this brochure, we always did a form that was called Son Chen, and it was dynamic tension breathing. About 150 movements in this kata that you have to do. But while you're doing this kata, and you have to stay online to keep it like it should be, they are beating on you. They're kicking you. They're breaking things over you. They're punching you. They're doing all these things. They're not trying to hurt you. What they're trying to do is build your focus up because you can't let anything stop you from getting to your goal. And it's a great life lesson. If it's something worth fighting for, then fight. You're not going to get it for free. I have a friend in North Carolina. We went to school together till the sixth grade. My dad moved to Florida after my mom died. My family dissolved. There was nine of us. Now, all of a sudden, there's three of us. I was 12, my brother was seven, and my dad, and we moved to Florida. Well, that was the course that I took, and it really knocked the wind out of me. I was reeling from that for a long time, from the loss of my family. Well, this guy, Joe, he went on to... I mean, Joe, his father was a senator, and his father, you know, helped him go to college, and Joe went off to law school. And today he is one of the top lawyers in North Carolina. He's a Wall Street attorney, all this kind of stuff. It's just the choices I made versus the choices he made. Well, if I had made the same choices and applied myself like I should have, I might have been a partner with him or something. I could have done anything, but we're limited by what we do, and we have to make better choices. And it comes down to making the first conscious choice that I'm going to do better. I'm going to get better out of this thing, and I'm going to start on a path that's going to lead me away from where I've been to a place that I need to go. So
well,
that's where
it's along with that, and we've got to make the first choice, and you emphasize it here in your pamphlet, and we've talked about it in the conversation I had yesterday with a chaplain and a nutritionist at Danville VA. Is you got to walk away from the alcohol and you got to walk away from the street drugs. I mean, you got to walk away from the caffeine. I mean,
but
those things are inhibiting your brain, inhibiting how you function so that you can't excel and do things. I mean, granted, and we all know this, we absolutely have physiological limitations due to the injuries and the exposures we had. The military has finally acknowledged that here in the last few weeks, even though it's not out to everybody yet. And, you know, it came out in the brochure. But then you can get that step, and then you've got to get away and break down those walls, as you guys talked about, and get out and move on. So if you got to go back and pick up some high school prerequisites or, you know, additional educational thing to fill in the blanks that you have, and then you go on to the junior college or go on to a vocational school, I mean, you got to make the conscious choice you're going to do it because, I mean, in all the years I've been around the military and everybody and taught it everything from kindergarten through graduate school now in military classes, anybody can excel and anybody can do anything they decide to do. If they decide to do it, seek out the help necessary for them to achieve it and just persevere until it's over.
Yeah, and one of the important things is we tell them in this brochure, choose your friends wisely because you'll probably end up like the ones you're hanging around. So, in other words, if you get a goal and you start focusing on it, you're probably going to part company with somebody that always has a lesser goal or they have no goal, and they're just partying, you know. And so partying will stop you from reaching your goal. And so you it's not like cutting friends off, but it's like, I got to do something better here. I got to surround myself with people who have a mind to do something, and they will help me get there instead of hindering me. And it's not being an antisocial person. It's just being choosing your friends wisely. You know, Joe's friends, he hung around friends that wanted to go to law school. He hung around friends that, you know, did certain things. And my friends were a little bit different, you know. And so I think that has a lot to do with giving us stability in what we're doing, get people of a like mind. There's a lot of things behind that, Doug. So, but it starts with the first choice of saying, I am not going to be a victim of this anymore. I'm going to be a survivor. And I'm going to press on. I'm going to make people proud of me. And they're going to be telling everybody in the family, I wish you were like Uncle Doug, you know, or something like that. Uncle Johnny, Uncle Ray, hopefully. But I don't want to be stymied. Everybody you see on the street that's stoned and laid up there and doing things and mutilating their bodies and everything else, they started out making the wrong choices, and it ended where they are. And they don't have a hard time starting over.
When you're dealing with these active duty guys, everything, and we know it's happening, I mean, it goes back since antiquity.
Right.
Use of alcohol in the active duty military and the reserves and the guards, whether you're on a drill weekend or you've got a off time on duty, is prevalent.
Sure. I mean, big time.
And we've got to look at that. So instead of channeling in some other direction, you do that. I mean, when I first got back from Vietnam and everything else and went back to school, I'm sitting there going, well, I got a job and I'm going to school. Well, the other guys I ran around with, they're coming home and they're getting off of their job at 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon. They're popping a six-pack out, and they're downing two or three cans of beer before supper, you know, and then they're sitting around the porch, and I'm going, well, wait a minute, I've got to be reading or I got to be studying.
Exactly.
And so I made the conscious choice, just like you said, who I was going to hang around and be with. And that influence from those individuals, it rubbed off. And I'm not saying that I'm any better or any different than anybody, but I just, like you said, made a choice on who I was going to be around and what I was going to do.
Right.
Because, I mean, that's the message for all these kids, isn't it?
Yeah, and like Dr. Phil said, the only difference between you and the person you admire is the choices you make. I don't say we could all be Wall Street attorneys, but I can be somewhere in the neighborhood. I believe I could have found my way. I think I would have loved to work in mental health when I really look at things.
You are, aren't you?
Oh, I definitely am.
Yeah,
but I could be
are.
A lot more qualified. You know, I am a survivor. I am a veteran, and it's very few that have come out and said, look, this is what I look like. Put yourself on the table, let them open you up and look at you and see what's going on, and then say, okay, now you tell me you've got all these problems. Now I believe you. So how do you get fixed? And that's what I'm able to do. I'm able to say, look,
yeah,
the VA gave me medication and therapy. Now in the right dosage and everything, it's very good. Thank you very much. But there was two things they couldn't give me, Doug, and it was peace and a sense of forgiveness of everything I'd ever done. And I really had a lot of guilt over stuff, Vietnam and all that stuff. We all do. But I had to ask God. I had to find God. How do you find him? Well, look up and say, God, if you're real, show me. And then you can say, look, I want to get better, and I can't get better without getting healed, you know, and I just ask you to forgive me. And so you're able to move on. And it's not a negative thing. It's not a bad thing. And I'm not, you know, religion can be bad. I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about a relationship. I'm talking about freedom, liberty, things like that. And you're able to move on in life. But with those four things right there, Doug, You can be about anything you want to be.
That's correct.
Without peace, you'll never make it because it will drag you down in the mud every time.
I was I'm going to read something here. It kind of fits into what you did. I was given this a long time ago. I'm not even sure where it came from. I think it came from a Cherokee shaman that I knew out in North Carolina. And I'm going to read this because it kind of ties it all together, and it's called My Quilt. As I faced my maker at the last judgment, I knelt before the Lord with all the other souls. Before each of us laid our lives like the squares of a quilt in many piles. An angel sat before each of us, sewing our quilt squares together in the tapestry that is our life. But as my angel took each piece of cloth off the pile, I noticed how ragged and empty each of my squares were. They were filled with giant holes. Each square was labeled with a part of my life that had been difficult, the challenges and temptations that I was faced with in my everyday life. I saw hardships that I endured, which were the largest holes of all. I glanced around me. No one else had squares other than a tiny hole here and there. Other tapestries were filled with rich color and bright hues of worldly fortune. I gazed upon my own life, and I was disheartened. My angel was sewing the ragged pieces of cloth together, threadbare and empty, like binding air. Finally, the time came when each square life was to be displayed, held up to the light, the scrutiny of truth. The others rose, each in turn, holding up their tapestries. So filled with their lives had been, my angel looked upon me and nighted for me to rise. My gaze dropped down to the ground in shame. I had in all the earthly fortunes, I had love in my life and laughter, but there had also been trials of illness and death and false accusations that took from me my world as I knew it. I had to start over many times. I often struggled with the temptation to quit, only to somehow muster the strength to pick up and begin again. I spent many nights on my knees in prayer asking for help and guidance in my life. I had often been held up to ridicule, which I endured painfully, each time offering up to the Father in hopes that I would not melt within my own skin beneath the judgment gaze who unfairly judged me. And now I had to face the truth. My life was what it was, and I had to accept it for what it was. I rose and slowly lifted the combined squares of my life to the light. An awful grasp spilled the air. I gazed around at the others who shared at me with wide eyes. Then I looked upon the tapestry before me. Light flooded the many holes, creating an image, the face of Christ. Then our Lord stood before me with warmth and love in his eyes, and he said, every time you gave over to me your life, it became my life, my hardships and my struggles. Yeah. Each point of light shining in your life is when you stepped aside and let me shine through until there was more of me than was of you.
Wow.
As Cherokee shaman gave that to me, her name was Linda, and she had an angel above her, and I've seen the angel and all this stuff when we were together out there. But it's kind of like it ties it all together that you decide what you're going to do, and you don't always make the choices of how your path is going to go, but then you excel and do what you can the best.
Yeah, and right. You know, the only thing I put in that brochure that even resembles anything about God or church or anything was the fact was I had told them to choose their friends wisely. That's just common sense, Doug. Be careful who you hang around because they'll either help you or hurt you. What I told them was, I said, the best home improvement you can do is take your family to church. Go with them. Why would I tell them that? Well, there's several reasons. One thing, some of the best people in town go there on Sundays, on Sunday mornings and such. Who do you need your kids hanging around? Who do you want your wife hanging around? Who do you want your husband hanging around? Good people. So they also have good teaching on morals and, I can't think of the word right off. But it just teaches you a lot of good things about life and morals and character. That's what I was trying to say, morals and character. And I said they have good food. They have good fellowship, which fellowship is two guys in the same boat. That's what it talks, fellowship. And then it also has that good teachings in there. But then you get to worship God, and that's an awesome experience itself. There's a lot of good, positive reasons for taking your family to church. One thing is it's the best place in town to hang out. I know there's a lot of problems in the world and in the churches and everything else, but you've got to surround yourself with positive people who are trying to move in a certain direction. And, Doug, we can't do it on our own. We get lost every time we do it. And so what we have to do is find good, positive role models. You know, with the Bradley thing going on, or Brady thing, I was reminded of that saying that said, let all your heroes be dead, because if they're alive, they'll disappoint you. And that's the truth. Don't get your eyes too focused on any one person, because they will disappoint you. Keep your focus on God. Keep your eyes on Him. He'll never disappoint you. And then keep walking. Keep working. Keep struggling. Keep doing all these things, and you'll end up in a good, positive place before it's over with. So, anyway, that's my spiel.
Well, Renee, you hit the nail right on the head, and that's what we have to do. And it's really the common sense approach. And I believe we can always overthink a problem and sit here and rack our brains of how are we going to fix this, how are we going to fix this, and we can talk to that until doomsday. Or we can use the very simple approaches that we're using, just like Lieutenant Houston. She's a suicide prevention coordinator at the hospital. She's the young lady. She's a professional. She lets us come in and speak to her Marines. She saw that brochure of what we were saying. She said, please come in. By all means, use it. Use it. I mean, you guys are saying what we've been trying to say for the last 20 years, but they're not listening to us because we're not portraying it in the way that it needs to be said. And who better to do it than somebody that's gone through it and that is willing to step up to the plate once again and put that all out on the table and share it with people. And that's the common sense approach. And, Doug, that's the whole reason you're getting us up here, is to come up to you with common sense approaches that I believe that if we can duplicate this with some help with like-minded individuals of yourself, we can really promote the positive change in our military culture, population, and really save some lives. And not only save them lives, but improve the quality of lives that we're saving. And you help that one veteran, you help that one military person, you help his whole family and the people that are associated with him. So I think it's wonderful. I want to appreciate you giving us the opportunity to articulate the message, and I think that's what we need to do.
I think one of the things, I mean, as a result of Paul's suicide and the other ones, Senator Nelson out of Florida has got an investigation going on the hotline. Again, looking at the response time, how it's put together and everything else. I mean, as we mentioned before, and we'll say it again, you know, we've got everything set up where we've got emergency chaplain through the Danville VA Medical Center and that program they're trying to get at other medical centers now, where if you need help, you can make a phone call and get a chaplain 24 hours a day. I mean, as you said, a lot of times when they have a crisis or response, somehow the cops come. Well, Ray, you and I have had the discussion. These cops carry guns and they're historians.
That's
but
right.
Their job is they carry guns, and they're going to protect themselves. And when a vet's in crisis, yeah, you might need security and everything else, but what you need is a trained team where you need that medical team
and
of medical professionals
team.
That understand the medical aspects, but you need that trained crisis chaplain, that chaplain that's trained in social and cultural and all this stuff help that can talk to the person and help them put everything under control. I mean...
Exactly.
I don't know any other solution, because every time we've heard where there's been a chaplain response involved in this or somebody trained like them, we've seen a lot more positive outcomes than when we have an emergency response and the cops show up with the taser and the guns drawn.
Well, you know, Doug, let me give you a real-life scenario. This happened last Wednesday when I was coming from the Veterans Corner TV show. I got a crisis call on our crisis line through the Joint Veterans Crisis Response Team. This woman was very distraught. She talked about her son being an Iraq-Afghanistan veteran, and he was having problems. And I asked her, I said, well, where are you calling me from? And she told me Lancaster. I said, okay, well, what city in North Carolina is that in? She said, I'm not in North Carolina. I'm in Ohio. She called the National Crisis Line, the Veterans Press 1, they told her that they did not know how to help in her specific area that she was dealing with. So they gave her, we have a memorandum of agreement with them, they gave the young lady our information. She called us. Now, what we were able to do is I was able to get some information from her. The situation that she was dealing with, I won't dwell into, but I had personally dealt with that situation before. What we were able to do is from North Carolina, I did it from, I was driving down the road in my car, I pulled over. I called, it took me about 5 minutes to get a series of calls. I ended up speaking to the Lancaster County, the county around Lancaster, Ohio. I spoke to their sheriff's department. I spoke to their crisis intervention team coordinator. He was a lieutenant. He happened to be a retired first sergeant. A lot of cops are veterans. They have a crisis intervention team. They were able to send their team out to this veteran's home. They spoke to the mother. They calmed her down. They found the son eventually later on that day, got him calm, got him to the hospital. And I spoke to this veteran the other night, and he's got a few more issues that we're working through. But them are just some common sense approaches that, being that we've dealt with that here, that the National Crisis Line, they're going to drop the ball, and that's why there's an investigation going on. And but if it wasn't for them giving this young lady our number, we might have had a dead mom and dad. We might have had a dead cop. We might have had a dead veteran.
Well, and they're listening to us, and I know they're listening to our show, and they've been using it, and all of us have been all over them with Paul Suicide and the other one because of the impact on us, and they were involved in all that. So, I mean, there is definitely some good coming about all this, and God bless you guys. I mean, when you came out with this stuff, two real warriors, and coming out with a brochure like this, it just makes so much common sense. And then Ray, your book, I mean, if I don't know, I mean, we go all back there. I mean, Bill McNeely Jr. died, and, you know, and Mike and Bill, they were all upset, but somehow all of us got linked together, and God only knows why. But, you know, we got Denise, and now we got, you know, the Colonel Dr. Bart Billings and his whole team. And you got the brochure out, and you're making sense and getting this stuff done. And then yesterday, I mean, walk in, yeah, wait, we're going to do it, and yeah, we're going to take care of it. It's kind of like.
I know. Well, let's,
yeah, let's do it.
I mean, you're working there, we're working here, and whatever we do as individuals, we're not individuals, we're as a team.
Yeah,
we've
got to work
some
as a team.
Common sense approaches that we know work. They're not complicated, they're not difficult, they don't cost anything. But they are very doable, and so we feel free to tell anybody and everybody how to do this thing, not only the veteran, but the young girl who's been molested or the girl that's been beat up by step-parents or something, or the whatever the case is. People are suffering from post-trauma. Some normal things happen in post-trauma. One thing, we know all the side effects that has with it, with the hypervention, hypervigilance, all the stuff. You're in hyper condition. One, there's two things that most people do. They will try to get medicated. They will try to self-medicate themselves, and most time it's through alcohol and maybe drugs, because they can't afford prescription drugs. They can't afford to go to the military, go to the psychiatrist. If they're in the military, they'll lose their rank, or they could lose their status. They could even be put out of the military. If they're civilians, because of the health care problems and everything we're seeing, they can't go to the doctor and get pills or anything. So what they do is they self-medicate with alcohol generally, and then drugs on the side if they can do that. The other thing they do is they tend to isolate. They will try to get away from everybody. And so we tried to make provision for that in that brochure by saying, if you isolate, and I'm pretty sure you will, because sometimes it's easier to isolate than it is to explain. And so what you do is you get away from everybody. Okay, we told them what not to take. If you're going to isolate, don't take weapons, alcohol, drugs, or pornography. All of those are stimulants, but they're negative stimulants. So what do you take? And then we told them a list of things about things that would help you to calm down, refocus, just settle down, get rid of that anxiety, and then you're able to think. And then just like I was in the woods when I was lost, I had to calm down first. I had to get my head together, and then I could think. And then I thought, okay, how am I getting out of these woods? Well, the thought came to me, okay, there's deer out here, and those deer have to eat, and they'll go to the bean fields. So just take the path of least resistance around all the hard stuff and find a little trail, and then I could walk it out. That's exactly what I did, and I came out of it. Well, we found a trail, Doug. We found a window for what you were saying. We found a trail through all of this nightmare of post-traumatic stress, and we're saying, okay, now we're willing to take people out with us. We will lead you out of this thing. We'll stay with you. We'll help you. We'll be available to you. And people that we can, we'll hold them, to the fire. Make sure they do what they're supposed to do too, because we can't do it all ourselves. We'll be overcome by it. So there's even a place on the website for Summit Care, which is Johnny's wife's organization, and it's a nonprofit. And we ask that if anybody wants to donate any money to help us to make these brochures that we're handing out for free, they can go there. And so I really appreciate, Doug, everything you're doing. I think it's a three-man team here, and we're doing a lot of good work. So thank both of you guys.
Hey, you're welcome.
I think one of the key things, and with the rehash of the end of the Vietnam War again and all that over the last few weeks and all the stuff that's been on TV, for me, myself, and I know Ray, you got on Johnny, and I know Denise and the other ones, what happened in the past was horrible, and we can't change what occurred in the past.
That's right.
And we can't, some days we don't even understand what happened in the past and what our involvement was. But it seems to me, and what you're preaching here and what I'm hearing you say and what I've heard all these other people that we've talked to say, is just move on and take the negative experience or positive experience, because it can be both negative and positive at the same time, and challenge that into a positive force for making a big difference.
It will.
Correct.
That's true. And their lives depend on this. This is not just something that we need to take haphazardly and say, oh, well, this is cool if you want to do it. I was at a meeting the other night at Vietnam Veterans, and I had three guys to come up to me and tell me they think they have post-traumatic stress. One guy said they gave me a bottle of medicine, and it said on there PTSD, and he was elated by it. He was like, oh, boy, I got it. It's like, what it is, it's an entitlement program. Is that what you want out of life, or is that what you want to be stymied by? I mean, if that's what you want, I guess you'll be working to get it. But it's not what you think it is. It's a deep, dark world that is taking people out every day. And anyway, John, we and Doug, we have to change our mind about this thing.
That's right.
Well, our time is up again. God bless you guys. I mean, incredible.
God bless you.
The brochure will be put up on the website, and we're going to continue to have these conversations and get help to everybody. Thank you very much, and good evening. God bless you guys.
Thank you, Doug.
God bless you, Doug. Bye-bye.